rolling. Welcome back to Two Dudes Talking Motorcycles. My name is Gleb, and you can follow me on Instagram at Gleb Lapham.
And I am Mitch, and you can find me on Instagram at Meets to the Beach.
And you can follow the podcast on Instagram at TDT Motorcycles. And you can also send us an email with your questions, comments, concerns, ride stories, pictures of your bike, or anything else you wish to tell us.
Yeah, please
do. Yeah, feel free to email us at tdtmotorcycles@gmail.com.
Yep.
Today, our main topic is going to be about motorcycle gear safety ratings. And yeah, we just felt like this topic is kind of, it's not really something we talked about before, and that's kind of like a pretty big topic, especially if you're
As of late.
yeah, especially if you're like a new rider and stuff. I think it can be kind of like overwhelming seeing the vast amounts of motorcycle gear that is available on the market, and to be able to kind of like determine where what's safer than something else and what to look out for and what to kind of like understand when you're buying new gear. Or even if you're an experienced rider, you know, it could just be some useful knowledge and information to go off this. This is not knowledge that I've fully gathered myself. I did use plenty of sources. One of the bigger ones was agvsport.com. They had a whole really awesome article on the different safety ratings on different helmets. I used RevZilla on their Common Tread blog. They had CE ratings for motorcycle gear, a really good article on that. And also Bennett's.co.uk, they had a really good feature on motorcycle gear CE ratings as well. Mm-hmm. So those are the three primary sources that I'm going to be using, or they're going to be using in this episode. And if you want to check those out, you know, yeah, feel free to read up on them yourself as well.
Yeah.
But before we jump into our main topic, we're going to talk about the news. And
oh boy, what news it is.
It's from very good news. Ducati released their, or the Desert X Rallies has finally hit the stores. And this bike was actually announced a little bit ago, but now it's finally hitting the dealerships. And it kind of reminded me that, like, hey, I don't think we've talked about this. Me and you both got the chance to ride the Desert X. Last year, and I loved that bike. It felt really good to ride on road. We didn't get to take it off road, but like riding it on road, this thing just feels fun and lively, and I really love how it sounds and how it looks. It's a really good looking bike.
You know, it was so much fun to ride. Like, I only got to ride it that one time. I don't know if you've only ridden it once.
Yeah, okay. I just ridden it once.
Yeah, it's just so, it's like the Multistrada. It's just so alive and it just goes. It's a very reactive and fun bike, man. I don't know.
I think reactive is a really good way to describe it. Yeah.
What I really liked about it was because it's more narrow. It's not as like, it's still fared, but not as much as like the Multistrada. Like getting on that thing, like just like the aesthetic and the look to it, like it did remind me of my bike, the Scrambler.
It's kind of like this like retro modern rally inspired look, and I'm a huge fan of the daylight running lights that it has, the two just like giant circles
it looks awesome
staring at you. And it's a really good feeling bike. Like, it feels very well balanced, even though it's comfortable. A really tall bike, it's taller than my Tiger or your Scrambler. But like, I really enjoyed riding it. But so Ducati now released the Desert X Rally, which is a sort of a souped up version of the Desert X.
If there was a bike that needed it.
Yeah. The biggest difference are the engine, and the engine power and the torque remain the same. However, you do get beefier suspension. Mm-hmm. So the suspension height is raised up. It is the front forks are 48 millimeters, and they got 9.8 inches of travel with 9.4 inches of travel in the back. They're KYB suspension, and everything's fully adjustable both front and back. So basically you're getting an inch more of ride height basically, and the seat is increased to like 35.
Yeah,
35.8 inches for a seat height, which is a pretty tall seat.
Yeah,
got 11 inches of ground clearance on that thing. That's 2 inches more than my bike, than my Tiger 900.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So that's a tall boy.
I dare you to bottom out.
Yeah. comes with like a different exhaust compared to the regular Multistrada. Comes with the beefier suspension, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
Comes, and Just looking at the pictures, the kind of like the front fender, the front fairing or whatever, sits up higher, more like a dirt bike than down low, kind of like a lot of adventure bikes.
Even like
venture bikes have.
Yeah, and the Desert X, you know, is very rally inspired, like Dakar rally inspired looking bike, but this even more so, like
this,
with that beak on it. And
it looks more like a dirt bike than an adventure bike. Yeah. And the Desert X has always been kind of more of a, it's a more dirt oriented machine. If you want some street oriented, that's what the Multistrada is for.
Yeah.
But the Desert X has been mainly geared towards off-road. And from what I've heard and the reviews that I watched online, it has been a very well performing off-road machine.
Yeah, and honestly, I believe it.
I believe
it. Chance to ride it as well. Like,
it's a very well balanced bike. It feels just really good to be on it.
Yeah.
But just because it's rally inspired doesn't mean you also don't get a lot of the creature comforts that you kind of expect from a $22,000 bike. It has a lot of the electronic riding systems, riding aids such as got traction control, it's got different riding modes. And what I really like that Ducati does with their riding modes is they let you adjust each riding mode individually.
Yeah.
So if you pretty much like put into off-road mode, you can still kind of adjust the level of traction control, the level of ABS intervention, kind of like all those things you want, which I think is pretty awesome that they let you do that.
Yeah.
Still got cornering ABS. It's got cruise control.
Your GPS in there, turn-by-turn GPS. It has wheelie control.
It's got the Bluetooth module, so you can like hook your phone up to it. Quick shifter, fog lights. It's got like, or daytime running lights.
It's a modern bike.
Yeah, it's a modern bike with modern creature comforts and things like that. I think the heated grips may be optional, which for that expensive a bike, I'm like,
come on.
I feel like that should just be something that's included and not optional, but it's a Ducati. So, but that's just a quick little update just because I think this bike was one of those kind of really cool, new bikes that you can kind of get. It has a carbon fiber skid plate on the bottom to save kind of weight because, and I personally don't know how to feel about that. I'm like, if that breaks, like, how much would a replacement be?
Yeah.
And what else do you kind of do with it? And it feels like it'd be something that's not too cheap to replace. Or
I don't know about that. I mean, shaving weight off a big bike is nice, but I mean, how much weight does that really save? I know carbon fiber is like very light and pretty strong, but I don't know. Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting. It feels like it's one of those things that's maybe like a little bit overkill, but at the same time I could see it like, being something that, that works pretty well. And I'm not finding anything about the, you can still get the auxiliary tank for it as well.
You can
add the tank in the back.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing anything about the heated grips though. Maybe it is included on this model. So, not 100%.
I would hope so.
I'm not 100% sure.
I feel like heated grips is like, it was such a luxury thing before. I just kind of feel like, especially if you live in like a state where it gets kind of cold, like that's just kind of a safety thing.
It's one
thing.
Of those, yeah.
Like, me personally, but
it's just one of those things that I think
I like free stuff.
Super, super nice to have. So I hope it does include, I'm just not seeing any information on whether it does or not on here. But also compared to the regular Desert X, it does shave off a few pounds. So it is a lighter bike. And I'm assuming with it being lighter, it'll probably feel a lot more lively off-road. But personally, I think the regular Desert X is more than enough for me. I don't think I would really need the full-on rally.
Yeah.
Rally Desert X. And they're great looking bikes.
Yeah. I'm definitely, not that I was never like warm to Ducatis, but it's just like after getting to ride a few, it's like they are very nice.
Yeah.
Machines.
Very nice machines. And if you get a chance to ride one, I definitely would recommend it.
Definitely. And if you get one, congratulations.
Yeah.
So,
actually, I'm going to correct myself. It is not lighter. It's 2 pounds heavier than the regular Desert X.
Mm.
But I wonder if that's due to the beefier suspension and stuff like
that
on it.
Yeah.
But anyways, should we move on to our main topic?
I think so. And I think we should do it over a beer.
I think we should do it over a beer.
There we are. Okay, so safety. So Gleb, maybe we've mentioned it before in our episodes. How do you feel about safety gear, like armor and all that?
I think that safety gear is important, but also I feel like it's one of those things that where the individual rider can kind of determine their level of safety that they're willing to put up with or sacrifice in order to either feel more comfortable or cool. Yeah. If you want to feel cool, or something like that. Me personally, I pretty much wear my like motorcycle rated gear anytime I ride more than like a couple of blocks away from my house. Sometimes, and the only thing I've really never, or like the only thing I've ever like skipped out on wearing if I'm like driving or taking a bike to work real quick, which is 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
Just a couple of blocks away from me, is I won't put on the, like my riding pants, but I'll still wear a jacket, gloves and boots just cause I feel like it's, I don't know. It makes me feel a little more confident, a little more secure and safe on the bike.
Yeah.
And I do think it's important, and I feel like, yeah, it's expensive. It can be cumbersome and uncomfortable, but you probably would be kind of thankful you have that if you were to go down on the bike.
Yeah. I agree. And like, if you've seen motorcycle accidents or anything, if anyone who's been in one, they can attest, no matter how minor, it's like regular clothes, they just shred.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not made to be, abrasion or impact resistance. Yeah. And that's what I wanted to really cover, is there's a lot of different standards for what kind of gear and testing gear has to go through to be able to like be classified as like motorcycle gear.
And based off, I mean, we have a lot of, well, not anymore. We don't have the same stuff anymore as much.
No. So, same pants.
Same pants, touring pants.
Yep.
You know, would you say like the research that you've done?
And same helmets now.
Yeah. with the research that led you to buying like those, let's say those touring pants, since we both wear them. With how much research and looking into them that you did, are you confident in those pants that if in the event you go down that they're going to at least not shred on you or prevent or mitigate an abrasion or a fracture? Because that's, for me, that's what armor has always been. It's risk management. It's not a guarantee.
Fracture, I don't know, but abrasion, I can definitely see it. And we'll kind of touch on that a little bit later, but before moving on to like clothes, I kind of just wanted to go from more like not really most important to least important, but
top to bottom.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Okay. But I wanted to start off with helmets because I feel like
Why I should have asked you, because we have the same helmet now.
That's true. Okay, so what led me to buy the same helmet is all the things I'm going to talk about right now. Mm-hmm. But the thing with helmets is I feel like a lot of like before I started riding, I kind of had the notion of like, okay, a more expensive helmet is going to be the safer helmet, which is not necessarily always the case.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're buying a reputable brand, chances are that helmet is going to be as safe as like a more expensive helmet. Mm-hmm. Like your, you know, like a $200, $300 HJC that has the same ratings as the $600, $700 Shoei, it's going to be just as safe as the other one.
Yeah.
But the more expensive helmet might give you more, more creature comfort.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
So it's, when it comes to a helmet, like with what's more expensive and what's not, if they have the same rating, as far as safety concerns, they've met the same standard there.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're buying creature comforts and name brand.
Yeah. Name brand, so creature comfort, a more expensive helmet might have a better liner that's more comfortable, might have better ventilation, maybe a better visor, might come with a pin lock or a better chin strap and just different things like that. But the safety rating is going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're a new rider or if someone, you know, looking to upgrade gear and things like that, the helmet is, I feel, is like probably the number one thing that you should not skimp out on.
Yeah.
And especially here in the States where, so there's different standards for motorcycles. So here in the US, they have to be all DOT rated to be able to be considered a motorcycle helmet.
So in this case, you are starting from the worst.
Yeah.
So spoilers.
The DOT standard itself, what it has to meet to get that standard it makes sense. It's not bad. It's how it's gone about. like meeting that standard. Then there's the ECE standard, which is the standard in the European Union, and it's European corporate. It's a bunch of French words. So basically, European like conformity standard. There's also the FIM, which is, if you remember back to our MotoGP episode, Federation Internationale de Motociclisme, which is like a the guys who like started and basically set up the MotoGP races and stuff.
Yep.
So they have their own certification that helmets must meet. And there's also SNELL, which is an American foundation named after Penn Snell, which they basically, or Pete Snell, and they do their own certification. And then there's SHARP, which is a UK certification.
Yeah.
So those are kind of like the main primary ones. But also, I think like depending on, most of our listeners are here in the States, but if you are in a country outside the US, EU, or the UK, I'm sure there's like different standards that your country might have that they have to meet. But these are like the four or five like most common ones you might see.
Yeah.
Especially here in the States. So I'm going to go down the list of, we'll start with DOT, DOT, Department of Transportation, regulation or whatever is FMVSS 218. And basically this deals with motorcycle helmets. And the three things, or the four things they focus on is impact penetration, retention. The three or four things and the visor. So the impact is tested using an anvil drop and the helmet may not exceed a certain level of impact to the head. And the impact drop is conducted in various conditions, including like heat, cold, and humidity to simulate various riding environments. Mm-hmm. It's also done both a head-on and like an angle. Penetration, they drop like a metal sticker down on top of the helmet, and if it gets through it, it fails. And the retention is to make sure the helmet stays on or the strap stays on when it's being pulled apart. And also the visor in front of the helmet must allow a minimum of 105 degrees vision left to right, horizontal vision. So the DOT has, those requirements are like make sense, mm-hmm. and pretty strict sounding. But the problem is the DOT basically relies on the honor system. So it's up to the manufacturer to test their equipment to make sure that it meets these standards. And while they can get audited and fined if they do not, but they still have the DOT sticker on, it's still like you can slap a DOT sticker on the helmet.
Literally almost
and then get checked.
Helmet.
Yeah. And I've seen like really dirt cheap like helmets at Walmart. They're like $50 a pop. That still will have like a random DOT sticker. And I'm like, there's no way that this thing will.
Yeah.
And will like meet those tests.
No. And I've, I ordered that one helmet from Amazon for the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride.
Yeah.
Which is coming up, by the way, but back to it. You know, I bought that. It was said it's DOT certified. It has the DOT sticker on there.
Yeah.
That is like the thinnest packing styrofoam. Like there's no way.
Oh yeah. That was like it's, packing peanuts in there basically.
It's like there's absolutely no way this would pass a random testing.
Yeah. So with the DOT test, I'm not like saying that it's a bad test or should be completely dismissed, but I think,
it's going to depend on who you're getting it from.
Yeah. It's going to depend on who and where you're buying it from. Like I'm a little weary of Amazon just because Amazon has so much random junk on there that I'm like, I don't actually know where and who's selling this beyond what it would like says there. So I would trust places like Revzilla, which if you are buying a new helmet, use our affiliate link down in the description below.
It will be there.
Yep. Cycle Gear, Rocky Mountain, ATV, like those like reputable well-known motorcycle stores.
And even your local dealership, motorcycle dealership, they'll have reputable name brand stuff there that you can get that's going to be safe.
Yeah.
Because you can even go into a freaking Walmart and buy a DOT helmet.
Yeah, and is it actually DOT? Like, has this been tested? Probably not. They still have a sticker on it. Will this brand be audited by the DOT?
Well, when you get into like a
maybe, but... Is that something you're willing to like bet your life on? Because I would not.
Well, you know, a place like Walmart, right? Like a big name brand, or not name brand, a big corporate place, right? It's probably cheaper for them to just produce a bunch of like shitty helmets and then pay the fines if they get regulated.
That's true.
Like yeah. it's like, that's it's so like they won't care.
Yeah. So the NHTSA, which is the National Highway Transportation Safety Board, I think I got that, Safety Administration, can conduct random tests, but they're random. So mm-hmm. they'll have to test random samples. My big takeaway is in the US you can't avoid DOT because it's a required standard. But I think if you're buying from a reputable helmet brand, we're talking like well-known brands, Bell, Shoei, Scorpion, Icon, mm-hmm. Arai, HJC, a whole lot of other ones, yeah. and from a reputable site, chances are it's going to meet those standards and yeah. you'll probably be fine. But if you're buying the cheap $40 helmet from Walmart that feels like it's made out of a the same plastic as a children's toy, probably not an actual DOT certification.
It's not going
to
fly.
Yeah. which brings me to the next point. So the rest of the certification we're talking about, they're a little bit harder to meet. And the particular one that I like to look for, even if it's not really listed on the US model, because either they didn't bother testing the US model, or the US model is slightly different than the European model, but I like to be able to see if a similar helmet is available in Europe and it's rated for ECE. Mm-hmm. So the previous regulation was ECE 2205. Now it's ECE 2206. So any helmet made or any helmet sold in the year 2024 and forward needs to be ECE 22.06 compliant. And some of the things they tested. So one of the big things about ECE is that it kind of simulates a more real life scenario for motorcycle yeah. helmets. And if you really want to go into super in depth on this, Fortnite has a great video where they actually do the tests as yeah. well that the actual manufacturers do. But the biggest thing about ECE that makes it stand way above DOT is that in order to sell a helmet in Europe, it has to be ECE compliant, but the manufacturer has to get it tested with the right authorities, with the right place before they're able to sell it. And they also test multiple units, and the ECE can come back and test different batches mm-hmm. of the helmet after it's already been on the market to test that, make sure it's still compliant after the initial release,
yeah.
which is a more strict standard, which I feel like in this terms of safety makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's more of, you know, where the DOT is, it's the honor system. It's like, oh yeah, it meets it. It'll work, yeah. you know? Whereas this is like, these are our standards. You're going to meet them or you don't.
Yeah.
And we are exactly. going to continually quiz you.
Yeah. On and different batches if so we it's a much to. More strict standard for, and mm-hmm. for me, if I'm buying something, one, a really expensive, because a helmet's probably going to be the most expensive piece mm-hmm. of gear you buy, or a second most if you buy a really fancy riding jacket. And it's probably the most important in terms of protection. That's the one that I'd want to be. Strictly tested to make sure it actually does what it's supposed to.
And if I was, you know, a gambling man, I would say pretty much any helmet, ECE 22.06 versus DOT, I'd put my money on the ECE doing a better job.
I would too. Especially because they do test them in scenarios that are more likely to occur in a motorcycle crash. So some of those scenarios is one of them, they test for impact protection with exposure to UV light. And they test helmets of various sizes. The UV light makes sense because you're probably going to be riding in the sun a lot.
Yeah.
Everyone knows, like, you know, you leave something hanging in the sun for so long, it eventually kind of degrades the mm-hmm. item over time just because heat, cold, UV light,
yep.
and everything like that. They continue to test the helmets throughout the production run, like I said, to ensure the quality remains the same after the initial release.
And your peripherals are tested.
22.6 also includes... So the latest regulation actually also includes tests for open face helmets and modular helmets. And what I think is interesting, they do test the chin bar on like full face helmets to make sure it meets the standard and not like breaks easily.
Yeah.
But if it's an open face helmet, there's a slightly different standard that doesn't test that, but it can still be ECE rated, which was not the case with the previous 2205 regulation. And I've noticed. I was looking at some modular helmets just out of curiosity, and there was one.
Well, you have a modular helmet.
I do, but I don't know if it's rated to be ridden open.
Oh, probably not.
But there's been, I think it's the LS2, the brand.
Mm-hmm. The Shark LS2?
Yeah. So that one is actually ECU rated for both in the closed position and in the open position.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's pretty interesting though, because like that means it sort of stays, you know, meets a certain safety standard, even if you're riding with it open.
Yeah.
It does also ensure that, like you mentioned, the visor is color accurate and does not impede the recognition of road signs and road hazards. And they also test for face shield penetration by firing a steel BB at it. So it has to meet a certain impact force before the BB can make it through. Just like the DOT test, the tests are also conducted in various weather environments, heat, cold, humidity, and different things. The other interesting is that they also test it with any OEM accessories that the manufacturer sells, like on the helmet, and they must also kind of make sure they don't impede on that safety.
Yeah.
Like any comm system, pin locks, anything like that has to also meet, or at least be shown to not reduce the safety of the helmet.
No, for sure.
So that
was when I was getting into motorcycling and doing research on stuff. For me, I was like, okay, I'm getting my bare minimum is an ECE.
Yeah. I would always check to make sure it's, even if it doesn't have an ECE sticker here in the States, I'll make sure that's the same helmet's available in Europe and is ECE rated.
Mm-hmm.
The other two things I still have yet to mention is that this is kind of what makes it more of a motorcycle focus test, is that they do a random drop test at 15 feet and that just let the helmet kind of like free fall and tumble in whatever way it wants to see the effectiveness of the protection at various speeds and angles of impact.
Don't they put like something in the helmet to simulate like a weight head or something, or is it just the helmet itself?
I'm trying to remember. I can't quite remember what it has. I think it might be just the helmet itself, but I haven't checked on that. That's a good question. And they also do impact or angled impact testing just to see how the helmet performs under like hard impact motion, also twisting motion to make sure it doesn't twist your head off of the helmet itself.
And probably like a glancing force as well to see how it reacts. Yeah.
And then, so I'm going to tie in the Sharp standard with the ECE rating real quick, because the Sharp is the UK rating, but Sharp has to first meet the ECE standard in order to be tested with a Sharp standard. The Sharp standard conducts additional tests on both flat and angular surfaces, and a lot of it is focused on like side impacts and like impacts from different sides and things like that. But the interesting thing is the Sharp standard uses a 5-star rating system, which kind of gives the consumer kind of a little bit more of a glance at how well it performs. So it's a 5-star rating system.
Yeah.
5 is being best, 1 being the worst, and 5 means it has the best impact protection from all sides, basically.
Yeah.
And like a 3 would be like, you know, it's good in the front and the back, but the sides maybe aren't as protective as front.
It's funny. So it's like, you know, at the very least, they have to have already met ECE for Sharp ratings. But it just sounds to me like, I would say like Sharp is like, it's like a referendum or like a reference guide of how a helmet rates.
Yeah.
And honestly, like that's just such a British thing to do.
It kind of does sound like a very British thing to do.
So it's like, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah.
And also I think the 5-star rating system actually like kind of makes a lot of sense.
Well, especially for consumers.
You know? You're like, okay, well, you know, this one's only rated 4 stars. Let me see where it kind of compromises. Mm-hmm. And it could be like, okay, maybe the sides or the top of the helmet aren't as bad. I think I'm fine with that.
Well, and I think if I remember right, in motorcycle accidents is like the strike point or like the point of impact on the helmet more like statistically is going to be around like the cheek and chin area.
Yeah.
So something like that would be helpful. Cause if you can look at the areas that didn't do so well, mm-hmm. you'd be like, okay, like in the event of going down, if I impact on my cheek or my chin, if it didn't rate so well there, that could be something for a reasonable adult to consider.
Yeah. Very true.
In their purchasing.
Very true. And, but the Sharp helmets are a little bit harder to find here in the US because they kind of conflict with the DOT standard, mm-hmm. because they lack the penetration test like the DOT standard does. So their shell construction definitely is generally like a little bit different. So some of the helmets here,
you know,
may not be Sharp compliant here, but the same helmet might be Sharp compliant in the UK.
Yeah, and just a comment on like the DOT with the penetration, how they have like a spike go through it. I really don't know when I'm gonna get.
Like... Yeah, the only scenario I can think of is like if you hit like a rock, some kind of rock really hard on the road, or if you like lunge yourself into like a car.
I'm just thinking like a war pick and like one of the orcs of Mordor is coming at me on the road. You know, because I don't see like. Like penetrations happen on the road, like from like broken metal and, you know,
yeah.
And impacts and stuff. But I personally just can't see like where that would be something that would require testing.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like if you're going to be hitting a force on like, I'm not doing anything sexual with my hands, but like if you have like a single point of force of impact, right? Like
yeah.
that's a lot of force to be entering in such a small area.
Yeah. So I think like the impact would be more like you hitting a flat side of a road or like, a barricade.
Well, and like the abrasion, like the twisting and
and the barricade. Those to me make more sense, which is why like the EC is very motorcycle specific, while DOT seems to be just like helmet specific in general. And then we move on. So those are the three like government related testing certifications.
Mm-hmm.
DOT, ECE, and Sharp. ECE by far being the most like thorough. And because the manufacturers can't leave that up to themselves to test, they have to go through.
And Sharp is EC with a buyer's guide.
Yep. So. That's a good way of putting it. Very true. I would personally be looking at like an EC helmet, or at least to make sure that this, a helmet I'm looking at here is also like our similar model is also rated for EC in Europe.
Yep.
Then that brings us to two of the private organizations that are primarily found. So there's the FIM, which the current regulation they have is the FRHPHE-02. I don't know, man. I don't know who comes up with these names. But so the FIM certification is if you're planning on attending any kind of races in Europe, especially if you're like in MotoGP or similar type of races, your gear, your helmet has to be rated FIM, and it's a very strict standard. And there's not too many, there's a few consumer level helmets that are available with an FIM certification, but the reason it's a lot of them aren't is because one, it's kind of expensive to test for because it covers a lot more things. It is available only for full face helmets. It does cover, the latest standard does also include off-road helmets to use like motocross and dirt bike racing and rallycross and things like that. But one of the big things is that includes even stricter impact testing using anvils of various shapes against flat and angular surfaces. And they have to be able to stay on your head and also absorb a certain amount of impact and abrasion in different angles, because if these are used in races, chances are you're looking at very high speeds and very violent crashes. And so they have a much stricter standard.
Yeah, and I, with the FIM rating, if you watch MotoGP and you see like there was a crash in the last MotoGP, and they just kind of bumped into each other and slid. But yeah, like one of them, I think it was Marquez. I think he kind of knocked his head a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they got up and they were fine. And so I can see like why there's like a different set of testing and ratings for like a race.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering the testing that they do, are they setting it up for scenarios in a race course and a race event, or like otherwise, like if somebody had the money and whatever, and then he was like, you know what, I'm going to buy an FIM helmet to ride to the coffee shop.
I think if it's safe on a racetrack, you'd probably be pretty safe on a on the public road.
But like, I'm wondering, like, I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not a physicist, but I'm wondering like what kind of forces there are like for something that's rated to or that's built more for like a high impact, high intensity event versus like a little tip.
Yeah,
that's a good question. Yeah, so
probably much harder forces.
But like, would that offer the same protection? Like, it, you know, if it's designed for a high impact event versus, you know, like
that's a good not question. So high. I think I'm going to go with yes, because to meet the FIM standard, if it is a consumer grade level helmet with an FIM standard, chances are it probably also meets the ECE standard.
Oh, that's a good point.
And the DOT standard here in the US. Okay. So maybe for only race specific helmets where they don't have to have the EC or the DOT certification, they probably have a different
yeah,
like level of protection geared more towards high speed and high impact things. But if it's a consumer one that anybody can buy, you're probably looking at similar or more, more of a rating, because it also has to be DOT or ECE rated.
Okay. And that's just conjecture. That's not a point of fact. Yeah. Or anything. That's just like, it was a question I was, you know, asking. And I think that's, at least this is how my brain works when I'm buying something like for safety. It's just like, well, is this going to be needed? Is this not? Okay. This is a more expensive, higher rating.
Yeah.
Like, but is it going to have the same protections and something that I would be doing, you know? That's, so, and I hope people would kind of like refer to that.
And, I'm glad you bring that up, because it kind of, cause that kind of stuff, makes a little bit more sense when we get into riding gear. Like, it's like jackets and pants. Yeah. So we'll get to that here in a minute, but before we move on, the last private certification is Snell,
right?
Which, is the current certification is the Snell 2025. It gets renewed like every 5 years. It is named after Pete Snell, who was a race car driver that passed away in the crash. The testing is voluntary for Snell, but certain race organizations require a Snell certified helmet in order to participate. Snell used to only be able to certify, or the certification only used to be able to apply to full face helmets, but now it includes certain modular helmets as well. One of the big things it does test for is side impact.
Okay.
So like bashes and crashes against the sides of the helmets. And I remember way back, 49 had a video where they test that. One of the big things, the Snell is not only for motorcycle helmets, it is for also race car and rally helmets, where you have a lot more side to side impact in case of a rollover, a sharp turn where you might bash your head against the window, or like a crash bar or a roll cage on a rally car or a trophy truck.
Yeah.
Whereas on the motorcycle, it's not as big of a thing because you're most likely hitting the side of a pavement.
Yeah.
With the side of your head, but it's still like, important it's like a
downward
to have
impact.
Yeah.
But you're going to be hitting the side.
But it's unlikely to be hitting the same side multiple times.
Yeah.
But it's still something that is required in a lot of races, especially here in the States. Or certain organizations do require a Snell rating. They test also for retention to make sure the helmet stays on under various loads and rotational speeds. And the test for retention, they test for retention by testing how much it would take for the strap to rip or stretch. The first test is conducted by hanging a 23-kilogram weight from the strap for 30 seconds. And the second test is conducted by dropping a 38-kilogram weight on the strap.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. And if the strap breaks, or if the strap breaks or stretches more than 3 centimeters, it fails. They also ensure the chin bar doesn't shatter or cave in by dropping a 5-kilogram weight on top of it. Hence where the modular helmets were not able to be certified before, because generally their chin bars aren't as strong as a full face helmet.
Yeah.
They also conduct penetration tests on both both the shell and the face shield, and the face shield must withstand a lead pellet fire from an air rifle traveling at 500 kilometers per hour, which is pretty fast.
That's, yeah. I don't know if you've ever been shot with a 500. Oh, that's KPH. Never mind. I was thinking feet per second. Never mind. That's very different.
Yeah. So it must be able to withstand that.
Okay.
So those are the helmets. Just to kind of summarize, EC best, DOT questionable, sharp as a buyer's guide for ECE, and then Snell and FIM are kind of like ultra special little ratings.
A little more,
especially FIM.
FIM,
you're probably going to find the least consumer grade helmets with the FIM rating. Snell,
and they're going to be expensive.
Yeah, like my the Shoeys that we both have, they're both Snell rated.
Yep.
And DOT rated. However, they're not ECE rated here in the U.S.
Yeah,
but they are in Europe.
So kind of checks all the boxes.
Checks all the boxes. Yeah.
So here's another. Oh, sorry. I'll let you.
And just to summarize, like I mentioned earlier, a helmet can be $250 and still be ECE rated or Snell rated, and it will have the same kind of protection as a $800 helmet with the same rating. Mm-hmm. It's just going to add the creature comforts, but you're not going to be compromising your safety by getting a cheaper helmet if that's what your budget allows you to have.
And so, I was going to get there. Like, so on the topic of your safety rating and everything there, something that, you know, I would think that we've all done. And if you haven't bought a helmet yet, or you haven't done it yet, okay. But, you drop your helmet from a relatively, not like from like higher than carrying or bike height. Oh,
that's true. Yeah.
So, you know, there's, I'm sure everyone who knows has been told like, oh, if you drop your helmet, you need to get a new one.
Yeah.
So what are we thinking? Like,
that's,
I mean, this is not advice. This is not advice. This is not advice. If it's a bad drop, by all means,
buy a new helmet. And if you crash,
buy a new helmet.
Buy a new helmet. Yeah. Like, if your helmet suffers a
catastrophic event,
like a strong impact big enough to dent, break, or like tear the outer shell or cause the styrofoam inside to crush, peel, or break apart, that helmet is no longer safe. Yep. That helmet is compromised, and if it hits that similar spot or close spot again, it may not be able to disperse the forces that it's supposed to in the event of an actual crash or like a stronger crash. So I think if you drop your helmet and you inspect it visually and see that there is no, like, nothing's falling apart, there's no like cracks or breaks in the inside and the outer material, you might be okay.
Okay.
You might be okay, unless it was like a really noticeable and hard. Well, impact.
Let's say like I just kind of narrow it down before we move on. Like, let's say you're walking down some stairs carrying your helmet, and one reason or another it falls and just tumbles down some stairs. What are you thinking?
I would think I would probably be keen on replacing it at that point.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd be able to trust it with. Maybe, I guess it would kind of depend how much each drop had, but that's a lot of multiple impacts, and I'm like, I honestly don't know if that shell or the inside material that's actually protecting your head from being crushed is going to be as effective anymore.
Yep.
Because it got tossed around, especially if it was like a lot of impacts multiple times, especially in the same spot. That's it's questionable.
Food for thought, right? Like, because again, like, we're not telling you guys what to do. We just hope, we're hoping that this information can
help you make a better purchasing decision.
Stir your brain a bit.
Yeah.
You know,
a purchasing decision at RevZilla using our affiliate link. So that's the helmets. It's kind of like a, not really brief summary, but there's a lot more things involved, and you can like go and research the testing, the various tests involved for yourself to see how they do it. It's kind of cool to watch how those tests are conducted, but they're there for a reason. They're there to make sure that, you know, you're buying a product that's advertised to be safe is actually safe.
Yeah.
Next we can move on to jackets and pants. Would you like to go through that or parts of it?
Yeah. So I guess we'll just start it off, well, jackets and pants, oddly enough, they don't have the same ratings as helmets, Gleb.
Nope. There's no DOT rating for pants. DOT only applies to helmets. Mm-hmm. And there's really not at least here in the U.S., there's not really a
there's not an specific EC variant.
Yeah. There's not really a specific certification.
So instead we, for these types of ratings, we're looking at an alphabetical rating system. So from the lowest levels.
Real quick. So all these ratings, they do come still from our friends over in Europe, which seem to be more concerned about safety than we're here.
Yeah.
But they do come from a CE certification, which is confirmation. What's the other word I was thinking? Conformity European something. It's a French word.
Yeah.
It's, I guess the French just come up with everything over there.
Good job.
But France. It's basically like European conformity. That's how it translates to. And the various levels fall into that. So sorry, take it away.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Thanks for doing that. Yeah. So again, from the rating from lowest to highest, there is C, B, A, AA, and
AAA.
Hey, look at that. So, and like Leb was saying here, it carries its own CE safety rating in a level 1 or 2.
And that's for the armor.
Yep. And that's, so you're looking at, with 1 being the less protection for impact, with 2 being the higher. Yep. And you've seen it in your jackets. You're thicker.
Yeah, you get the little label.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the little label.
Yeah.
So, Do you have a garment here?
I do. Pardon the noises, everybody. You know what?
Let's use that. Okay, so for the listeners,
this is a Merlin Axe shirt.
Merlin Axe shirt, what I'm holding here, and if you're watching on YouTube, your gear will have this little like a tag somewhere attached to it. And for the listeners, your gear will have a tag attached to it somewhere in the gear, and you'll see various icons. The top one is going to be CE, little instruction manual, so you can like okay, it if it has the CE sticker, that mm-hmm. means it has been either tested, certified, or approved. I think CE means it's been approved for. What's CE? It's been CE tested. Yeah. Not this specific shirt, but this line of garment yeah. has been is conforming to this E standard. Then you have the A, the letter designator, and the A means that this has the A rating of abrasion and impact resistance, which mm-hmm. means it meets a certain abrasion standard, and it also comes with armor that is at least level 1 rated.
Yep.
And so this, it comes all together in one garment, yep. not including the back protector.
And I actually can't remember if like having that actual CE on there means anything. I don't know if that's going to be.
It has, okay. If it has been tested for conformity and certified, it will have the CE yeah. rating. There's a separate label for if this specific piece has been CE approved, okay. like yeah. just for this item.
Yeah.
But just the regular CE rating generally means this line of items has been approved, has yeah. a CE level 1 or level 2 rating. And for this particular
shirt, it would make sense. It's a yeah. European brand, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and the level A rating just means, like, it has a certain degree of abrasion resistance, but it's not the top degree of abrasion resistance.
Yep. No, for so, sure.
So thank you for that, Mitch.
Uh-huh. Oh, let's get that out of the way.
so the CE conformity and the CE ratings, in order for a brand to sell their item in Europe, they have to have the CE conformity and they have to be tested for whatever degree of whatever level of impact and abrasion protection they have.
Yeah.
The big thing here is that the brands cannot conduct in-house testing for their item. It has to be done by an outside agency that's been approved by the European Union in order to be
which is
sold.
Basically the complete opposite of the whole setup of DOT.
Yeah, and DOT doesn't even test garments.
No, of course.
Just the helmet.
But like in terms of like
yeah.
thought so processes, right?
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a very strict thing. So you're basically, you know, like if you want to sell this in Europe, someone other than you has to test it in order to keep bias and potential like tampering mm-hmm. away from it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so if a brand isn't sold in the EU, they don't have to conform to those safety ratings. If it's just a US only brand, but a lot of them will still conduct at least one test or two saying so they can put the CE tested label or designation somewhere in the garment or at least in their description
yeah.
saying like, hey, we tested it, but we didn't like spend the extra money to certify it to be sold there. But we have tested it because it is a really good selling point on a lot of these things.
I mean, that's what I look for in my
yeah.
clothes.
So. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. So do you want me to go over the letter classes?
Yeah, you can take it. Okay. And I can kind of, and I'll pick up from there.
Okay. So the letter classes, like Mitch mentioned, are CBA, AA, and AAA. And this is where kind of where you said earlier they
for reference, the axe, the Merlin axe shirt we just showed, it is a A class,
A rated,
yep,
A just A,
A.
A, we're Canadian now. So the C class is rated for armor protection, so impact protection, but not abrasion protection. So you're looking at maybe like off-road armor, looking like back protectors.
Yeah.
Like the riding shirts where it's just like the armor, mm-hmm. but no abrasion protection. So like an elbow pad.
Yeah. We'd have to look. I can't reach it from here, but like our mesh jackets.
I know mine is A rated.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder what my Eclipse is. But anyway.
And then B class is the opposite of C class, and it tests for abrasion resistance, but not impact protection. So a B class garment will not generally will not include armor with it. So mm-hmm. in order to get proper protection out of a B class garment, usually you have to wear some kind of C class armor underneath it. And then the A classes, all three of them, must be both abrasion resistant and have armor included for impact protection. It just depends on which level of armor and impact protection they have.
It's like
it will get different A designation.
Well, like it's like the longer of A's you have, it's like
the longer of a slide you can have.
Yeah. So, or it's like the from the shortest scream to the longest scream, like ah. Yep.
Exactly. So if you're wearing full racing leathers,
you're probably
it's going to be AAA rated. However, you know, garment technology and materials have improved a lot over the years. Now you can even have adventure gear, even riding jeans that are AAA rated, which means that if you're going way faster than you probably should be, end up sliding, that you have a much lower chance of it getting to your skin, through to your skin after sliding for a certain amount of time.
And that's just abrasion. I mean, you might still get burns just from the friction.
That's true. Yeah. And you might still break something because the armor can only protect or reduce the force by so much. The tests for the letter classes include impact and abrasion resistance by using a what's called an advanced abrasion resistance testing machine, which basically is like a belt sander running over a garment for an X amount of time, and it measures how long it takes to tear through the garment. And if a garment, it also then it tests for tear resistance to test how long, like how far a garment can stretch or how much force it takes to tear the garment. It tests for seam strength, and it also tests for dimensional stability, which means that the garment must stay and keep its shape after multiple washes or being like wet and dry and all of those kinds of things to make sure that, because if it becomes bigger or smaller, then it can potentially compromise or lose its safety rating.
Yeah.
So that one you see has a much bigger label on it on your pants there.
Yeah. And so these are the touring pants we were mentioning before earlier.
The climb switchbacks for the curious. They are double A rated, so it means they have...
Curious while you were just going over it. Like, yeah. Actually, I don't know if I've ever looked at that personally.
So. They have a bigger level of...
That's nuts. This material is supposed to be double A rated?
Yeah, this is double A rated.
Huh.
So it means it can slide for... a certain degree. I don't remember. I couldn't find the actual like numbers of the difference between the different ones, but yeah.
Interesting.
This is AA rated and the armor C level 1 rated. And so yeah, and because it's AA rated and CE certified, it's supposed to... Is it CE certified? Did I have a CE? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, now you got me. Yeah, CE.
CE.
Yep.
So it's not supposed to shrink after washing it. Which is kind of nice.
Can't test.
Yeah. So that's the abrasion resistance and the different armor ratings. So A and AA is probably going to be the most common ones you'll see for most riding gear, at least street riding gear. Because even if you get like a pair of riding jeans, chances are it's going to be at least A or AA rated. And it will come with either knee armor and hip armor.
Or an option for hip armor.
Or an option for hip armor, which I think with the latest regulations, they have to have hip armor in them as well.
So they have to have it, or they have to have options for it?
They have to have it included to get a AA certification, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And I think for just A, it might be just knee armor.
Yeah.
However, I'm not 100% sure on that. And then for AA or AAA rated, you're looking at like the highest level of abrasion resistance and the highest armor possible, which is basically like your full on race cowhide race leathers.
Yeah.
Those are the different letter classes for garments, jackets and pants. And then they also include different levels of armor in those garments.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different types of armor, it seems.
Yeah.
So
for level one armor, the level one armor may not transfer more than 35 kilonewtons of force to your body. Yep. Level two armors cannot transfer more than 20 kilonewtons of force to your body. So, and each piece of armor has a different category of certification. There's like a little number at the bottom there. And those are the ones that kind of say like, oh, is this hip or knee?
That's the
hip. So like, this is hip armor. And then there's going to be like a separate number for knee armor, shoulder armor, elbow armor, different kind of armors, the back armor,
yeah,
and things like that. Sometimes manufacturers may not, it may be like A rated or B rated. However, they might exceed that standard, but they just haven't spent the time or money to test for the higher classification.
Right. Yeah.
And one of those things, I feel like, again, if it's a reputable brand, you're probably looking, you're probably going to be okay buying it.
You should be, at the very least. Do we have, I'm curious if you just know, because I don't see it in our notes, and I forgot about it. D30 and CE, is that all the same stuff? Because, or is the D30 the material?
The D3O is the material.
Okay.
The material and the brand and the company that makes this orange stuff, if you open it up out of your armor. This is, D3O is like the company or the manufacturer
versus
of this, where CE is the people that will certify it.
Yeah. But like where this isn't a D30 piece of armor.
No, no, this is a, it says winner on there. Mitch, you're a winner.
Oh, thank God.
So I don't know what brand this is, but yeah, it's still CE certified.
Yeah, but, it's CE certified, yeah. But it's not D30. And I know
D30 is the brand.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I know D30 gets like tossed around as like a selling point for a lot of.
Yeah, clothing. Because it's a well-known brand, because especially like.
Well, it's very, if you feel it, it's a lot softer than this.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things is like, for the listeners, if you're seeing this, you can just see it. But for the listeners, I'm holding a piece of D3O. I think it's D3O, the way they say it, instead of D30.
Oh, okay. D3O.
But D3O or D30 hip armor, it is very flexible and soft to the touch. But as soon as it has a strong enough force, the material that it's made of is supposed to harden and basically help take that force. But it's level one rated, so there's a certain degree of force that it will still transfer.
Right.
The CE or level two armor is generally what you'll find like in the riding, in probably your touring jacket and in my touring jacket, where it's actually physically hard. Like you can feel like you can knock on the armor a little bit.
Yeah,
it still has some flex to it, but it's noticeably thicker and less flexible.
Yeah, we'll have to do a review of our gear sometime. Yeah, with this one, definitely. I mean, this is not very hard.
Yeah.
So, okay. But it's a new jacket.
So. So those are the levels of protection for the armor, and then boots and gloves. Also, you guessed it, have their own levels of protection. Hey.
And like the other armors, or like armor rating, I should say, gloves have a level 1 and 2 protection.
And they also are CE.
Yep, they are.
CE certified and conformed to.
No, I don't have my gloves attached to me. So, but yeah, so it is going to be testing like a lot of those same things, like for the cloth material of the jackets and your pants. It's going to be looking for the pull of resistance, the tear strength. It's going to test the seams and how it would perform against like cuts and abrasions.
Yep. And also impact resistance at the palm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The biggest difference between the level 1 and level 2 gloves is level 2 must have knuckle protection, but it is optional on a level certified or a level 1 glove. Level 2 gloves must also cover the wrist. That's the biggest difference. So it can have knuckle protection but still be rated level 1 because it only goes up to here. Yep. A level 2 has to cover basically a gauntlet.
Or past.
Gauntlet of the glove or past the wrist.
Okay.
And then if you look at the gloves, it will have like a KP symbol on the tag, which stands for knuckle protection, basically. And then for boots, also level 1 and 2.
Yep. And 2 is going to be for your taller boots. So your ADV boots, your race boots, and
off-road, motocross.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. But I guess that's not included with ADV because motocross is more.
They're way intense. Thicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way more robust boots.
Yeah. And so they are going to have. So level 2 is going to be, again, your higher resistance to damage.
Yeah.
Harm. But the. And so you're at level 2, both of them are going to be tested for abrasion resistance, impact, cut, and crush. And crush is the big one for boots. I mean, how many people do we know that have busted their ankle?
And I remember like researching way back when I started riding, ankle injuries are the top injury that people get, especially if they're a new rider, because there's a higher chance that you might drop your bike. And there's a lot of small little bones in there in your ankle and your foot that are easy to break, especially with like a 500 or even a 300-pound bike falling right on it.
Well, I don't know if you ever even I've never broken my ankle, but I don't know if you ever bruised the bone or the muscle around there. I have
twisted my ankle before.
It takes sprained it jumping from a trampoline.
Yeah.
Forever to heal.
And you're not going to be wearing any boots with that, or probably riding your bike if that happens.
Yeah. So
I think after like the crush proof is like the big thing. If your bike falls on it, the sole of your boot will not be crushed. It will stay the same shape, or at least supposed to, if it's CE certified.
Yeah.
There's additional things you can find on the label that indicate if it's waterproof, if it's slip proof, and other various like resistances or certifications it has, but it still must be at least level 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Or 2 certified. Additionally, for other items like airbags, they also have their own levels of certification. For mechanical vests, it's kind of set in stone. The electronics vests are still being worked on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about, I think that's pretty much most of the gear.
Yeah, just with the airbags. And if you like, mechanically means it's like there's like a pull tab that's attached somewhere on the bike. So if you go off or go down, it's going to blow up on you.
And electronics.
It's supposed to sense it. I don't know how they do that.
I think it's like a little gyroscope or a bunch of different like accelerometers and stuff like that. I don't know. I feel like. Like even the phones and stuff, the sensors are pretty advanced nowadays. Yeah.
I can just imagine though, you're like you go into like a lean, right? Yeah. All of a sudden you turn into the Puffmallow.
So. Like for me the big thing for mechanically is like you don't have to charge it.
Yeah.
It's always guaranteed to work. But the downside is if you forget to unplug it when you're walking, you turn off into the bike, a marshmallow. You're gonna turn into the Michelin man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't mention neck braces on here, but I'm pretty sure those will also have their own safety rating.
And those are going to be pretty much like set for like racing and motocross.
I think a lot of ADV and...
Oh, I know like a lot of hardcore ADV people
wear. And off-road riders also wear them to keep the head from like bouncing around too much.
Yeah.
But just for closing notes, you know, we talked about the safety gear and the helmet safety ratings and the Garmin safety ratings. But I think it's... I think the big takeaway is like you don't have to get the AAA rated suit for everyday riding.
No.
You don't even have to wear motorcycle gear, right? At least wear a helmet. Please at least wear a helmet, boots, and gloves so you don't break those things.
Because
without those, you're not going to be riding at all.
Yep.
If you're going to skim somewhere, I think probably jacket and pants are probably the two things you might be okay skimming if you're willing to take the risk of ending up with a road rash afterwards.
Yeah. And like again, for me personally, like I don't really care what anybody's going to use. It's their own personal choice. As long as they're wearing a helmet, gloves, and jacket. For me, those are like my bare minimums. So I've had people on the back of my bike and I make sure that I have a jacket, helmet, and gloves for them at least.
Yeah.
I'm not about to go out and buy pants that don't fit me, but I do think like I think if I have to skimp somewhere, it would be on the pants, you know. And even in the MSF, even though you're not doing high speed or it's all low speed in the MSF, they just say, you know, long sleeve, thick shirt,
yep,
gloves, long sleeve, helmet,
yep,
and like boots that cover the ankle,
yep.
You know,
for me, like boots would be a big thing, just because like,
well, you've dropped your bike on your
I've
foot.
Dropped my bike, and guess what? That boot. That held up the entire, well, probably not the entire weight of the bike, but like at least like 200 pounds of weight on my foot, on my ankle, and my foot was fine. It wasn't even bruised.
Yeah.
And I had to like wedge my bike up to get my foot to slide or to get my leg to slide out from under it.
Imagine that in a hiking boot, right?
Or it would be crushed.
Yeah.
Imagine that like happening if you're wearing just sneakers riding around town and you end up dropping your bike or tipping it over and it lands on your foot and that sneaker just goes pancakes into your ankle.
Well,
you're going to wish you had at least a riding boot at that
point. Well, and even for ADV boots, I mean, now I have two pairs of ADV boots and one of them is more rigid. For the specifically around the ankle. So it's going to offer more protection than the other one.
So
it depends what we're doing.
It just depends on what you're doing, what kind of riding you're doing and what your acceptable like risk tolerance is.
Yeah.
And that's basically all it boils down to.
Yeah.
You can ride in whatever you want, wearing nothing at all if you want. You can squid it.
Just
know that, you know, if something were to happen, whether it's your fault or somebody else's fault, it will hurt a lot more if you're not wearing gear.
Well, and I would say too, like, this is going to sound like an oxymoron after we've talked this long about it, but like, don't listen, don't take anybody's word for it on the internet, right?
Yeah.
All this is going to be your risk mitigation.
Yeah.
And like, you know, okay, so if somebody says like, oh, this armor is not going to protect, it's not going to stop you from having a broken bone or abrasion in a crash. It's like, okay, maybe it won't, but maybe it will mitigate how severe that is.
Exactly.
You know? So
I think mitigating risk is the biggest takeaway is that you might get hurt, but you'll get hurt less with proper gear.
Yeah. So,
check the labels, look at the certifications.
Your safety matters.
Your safety matters. Don't let other people like bully you, or don't feel like, you know, you're not being a cool, quote unquote, enough rider if you're not like, if you're kind of nerding out about motorcycle gear and wearing like armored jeans or, you know, an armored jacket. At the end of the day, if you go down and they go down, you're the one that's going to be hurting less than they are.
Yeah, potentially at the very least.
Yeah, at the very least. So ride your own ride.
Yeah, but wear a helmet. So if both of you crash, at least you can still complete full sentences.
Yep. So exactly. I think that's the topic.
Yeah, I think so.
It was a doozy. It was a little long one. I'm very excited for our next episode. We're not going to say what it is quite yet.
This is a surprise.
Leave it as a surprise for next week. But
I got goosebumps. I'm ready for it.
I'm pumped for it. I'm so pumped for it. So stay tuned. Tell your friends. And thank you so much for listening.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
And ride safe. And
happy riding
season. Live long and prosper or something like that. Anyways, have a good one, guys. Bye.
Bye.